Welcome to the January 2022 edition of JW Broadcasting. The 137th Annual Meeting of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of Pennsylvania was held on October 2, 2021. How joyful it was to be together in person in the Warwick Auditorium for this event. The Bethel family members in attendance enjoyed a wonderful lineup of spiritual talks, exciting updates, and videos. Now, we're delighted to be able to share the entire program with you here on JW Broadcasting. The governing body assigned me to be the chairman for the annual meeting and to anchor the January and February JW broadcasts. This month, we'll see the first part of the program, and part two will be featured in next month's broadcast. So please enjoy the first half of the 2021 annual meeting. Do you know what time it is? Most of us are conscious of time every day. We have a time to go to work, a time to go to school, a time to eat, a time for our Christian meetings, and even a time for association with our dear friends. As the great timekeeper, Jehovah reminds us at Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1 that there is a proper time for everything. And thus, it's not surprising that the Bible speaks of the right time for various events. For example, at Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 4, Jehovah promised the obedient Israelites that he would bless them with showers of rain at the proper time. Well, that's just a detail probably for most of us. But if you've ever lived in a farming community or you've done farming yourself, you know that rain at the right time can give you a bumper crop, but rain at the wrong time can completely destroy that same crop. Even words can be spoken at the right time. Proverbs 15, verse 23 says, "A word spoken at the right time, how good it is." Truly, it is a fundamental principle that timing is everything. Well, think for a moment about prophesied events that took place right on time. Jesus was baptized at precisely the time when the Messiah was prophesied to appear. The kingdom began its heavenly rule right on time in 1914. And looking to the future, Jesus said that Jehovah has set the time, even the exact day and the hour for the end of this wicked system of things. Does the governing body know when Armageddon is going to come? Yes, we do. It's going to come right on time. We have full confidence in that, don't we? That Jehovah is going to bring about those earth-shaking events exactly on time. But there's something else that Jehovah has promised to provide at the proper time. Would you go in your Bibles? Let's look at Matthew chapter 24 and verse 45. Now here, Jesus posed this question: who really is the faithful and discreet slave whom his master appointed over his domestics to give them their food at the proper time? Happy is that slave if his master, on coming, finds him doing so. Truly, I say to you, he will appoint him over all his belongings. Well, what did Jesus say here? He said he would appoint a faithful and discreet slave who would provide the spiritual food. But there's another important detail there. Did you notice it? He added, at the proper time. Well, because of Jehovah's perfect sense of time. He knows exactly what his people need, and he knows exactly the right time to provide it. Now, just consider a couple of examples of this. Just as World War II was erupting, the November 1st, 1939 issue of the Watchtower featured an in-depth discussion of the topic of neutrality. That timing was absolutely perfect. Because of those articles, our brothers worldwide knew exactly what to do as the war engulfed the entire planet. Well, after the war, as the organization was rapidly growing, Jehovah's organization arranged large international conventions that were held in New York City. In 1958, a quarter of a million people, can you imagine, overflowed Yankee Stadium and the Polo Grounds. Were any of you there? Well, it's so wonderful. We still have a few people there. It's not that I wasn't in the truth at that time. It's just I wasn't in the world at that time. Well, that amazing convention came just on time. It energized God's people, and we could say it put Jehovah's Witnesses on the map. It was hard to ignore a convention of a quarter of a million people. Well, fast forward to 2020, and a time when the world was engulfed in a global pandemic. Large gatherings were prohibited in most countries. Could we go to Yankee Stadium and have 250,000 people? No. But right on time, Jehovah guided the faithful and discreet slave so that our worldwide brotherhood could enjoy the convention program from home. Truly, spiritual food at the proper time. And during the pandemic, we've had to change our methods, haven't we? We've had to receive direction about how to carry out our preaching work and how to carry out our congregation meetings. But throughout this period, we have received powerful, powerful evidence that Jehovah has given this direction to us at the proper time. Now, let me just give you a couple of examples. During the 2021 service year, at least 22 branches have reported an all-time peak in the number of publishers. Can you imagine? During the pandemic. For example, the Korea branch has reported a new peak in publishers every month during the 2021 service year. Isn't that amazing? During a pandemic. And with so many wonderful things happening in the field, I'm sure that you're all wondering about our worldwide memorial attendance for 2021. Well, by the undeserved kindness of our amazing God, Jehovah, we have reached an all-time peak, crossing the 21 million mark. Would you like to know the exact figure? Well, keep on the watch. It'll be announced today at the proper time. Well, today in our program, we are going to have a wonderful buffet of rich spiritual food of many varieties and types. And by the end of the program, I'm sure that you'll agree that it was just what we needed at this moment in time. Well, last year at the 2020 annual meeting, the governing body was excited to release a new publication to study with interested ones entitled Enjoy Life Forever, an Interactive Bible Course. It introduced a new and innovative way to study the Bible with interested ones. How has the publication been received by Jehovah's people? And maybe more to the point, How is this new format touching the hearts of those studying the Bible with us? Please enjoy this video.
How thrilled we were at last year's annual meeting to receive a new publication, Enjoy Life Forever, an interactive Bible course. Already, many publishers are having success in conducting progressive studies using this new tool. As you listen to experiences from around the world, note the evidence of Jehovah's blessing.
When they made the announcement of the new publication, for me, it was just pure excitement.
Actually, I was so overjoyed that I kept going to the website around the time of the release, and at times I would even refresh my browser a few times a day to see when it was out.
Having all the teaching methods right in our hands, what more can we ask for?
We're so excited that during this pandemic, Jehovah has given us something to energize our ministry.
When you heard that we would be using a new method for conducting studies, were you a bit hesitant? Pay close attention to what experienced teachers are saying about the benefits of this approach.
Before, it wasn't uncommon to hear students start their comments with expressions like, the paragraph says, or as the book mentions. Now it's not like that.
In the old way of teaching, it was a bit difficult for me to discern if my Bible students really understood what they were learning, or if the truth reached their hearts.
I think I was using too many additional points to convey one idea, and just explaining too much. So my Bible students would get even more confused.
With some well-educated people, the studies were, in a sense, too easy for them. They found the answer very easily from the paragraph, and were able to answer correctly, but it was very hard to know what they really thought about the matter. With this new book, it seems like it is easier to see the person's genuine thoughts on the matter.
In the previous method, you would see the student looking at the book a lot. But that doesn't happen now. When you look at the student, you can tell he's thinking about the answer instead of looking for the answer.
They used to enjoy the Bible study in the past, but now they enjoy it much more. Now they are able to keep focused from the beginning to the end of our session. They feel motivated and closer to Jehovah.
To reach the heart of a Bible student, we need to understand what he's thinking and feeling. How does the Enjoy Life Forever book help us to do that?
One of the things I love about it is how after we read the Bible verse, there's the questions that follow it that are perfectly phrased for us. It really engages our students' hearts, and it helps them to understand the Bible teachings right away and helps us to see what's in their heart as well.
It lets the student express what is in his heart, which allows us to help him.
The first time I looked through this publication, I could already see how appealing its format is. There were no lengthy paragraphs, and it was prepared in a very interactive way.
With this new method, I definitely talk less. My students talk more.
And the one that starts it all off, the introduction video, it just makes everything fit together. And one of the amazing things that it introduces right away is the prayer. Because often as a teacher, we didn't know exactly when to introduce prayer or how to do it, but the video does it for us.
The Some People Say feature is very effective. So when the student is able to answer the question, and sometimes even add a scripture, I tell them, you know, that could have been in the ministry.
Obviously, teachers are excited about the new book. But what impact is it having on their students?
Bible students have been pleasantly surprised. I asked one student how they felt to be using this new publication. And the response was, "Why didn't we do this sooner? It's great. I'm a lot calmer."
Another student told me that she was relieved to no longer have to find the answers, but rather express her thoughts and feelings.
During our discussion of the Dig Deeper section in Lesson 2, my Bible student really appreciated the scriptures and the beautiful artwork. He said that he could already see himself in paradise, enjoying the many promises of Jehovah. He said that our discussion made him feel Jehovah's love.
With the students, they're not so overwhelmed with the new book when we ask them to prepare the lesson. With the Bible Teach book, when we would ask them to prepare these paragraphs, it was like you asked them to go to the dentist. They just seemed so intimidated by it. But now they smile and they're like, okay, I can do that.
One student in particular, he wrote in the gold box, says, I want to share the points from this lesson with my friends and work colleagues within a week. And he did.
One of the videos that was really effective was the one from Lesson 4, My Search for the True God. It shows the experience of Sister Sotan Yuen. My students were deeply moved. They really felt Jehovah's love for them and wanted to speak with him. They felt motivated to pray.
We were studying the first lesson with an 83-year-old lady when we came across Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. She read it in her own Bible, and at first, she didn't quite understand it. Then we pondered over the verse together with a question, and then all of a sudden she asked, oh, does this verse mean that I should dig for the answers in the Bible myself, instead of asking a priest? It was quite a special moment.
The video for Learn to Enjoy Bible Reading was very helpful for one young man. After watching it, he set the goal of reading the Bible every day.
With one Bible student, we had encouraged him to become an unbaptized publisher in the previous study book. And now when we were in lesson 2 of our new study publication, he expressed the desire to become an unbaptized publisher because he felt he could share one or two points from each lesson with his friends and others that he knew. And so now he's approved and is doing very well in the ministry.
Thanks to this new book, I now conduct 15 Bible studies. The book helps them to maintain the desire and motivation to keep learning about Jehovah, his beautiful qualities, and the future that awaits us.
Clearly, our worldwide brotherhood is excited to use Enjoy Life Forever. What a tremendous gift from Jehovah.
And that of all the facets of our ministry, without a question, conducting a progressive Bible study is the most satisfying aspect. And now we have the tool and the method to make it much easier.
I'm very grateful for this tool. It really helps us to sense how close the governing body recognizes we are to the end, but it in no way feels like a rushed program. The heart is definitely being reached gently and lovingly, but then that is what motivates quickly.
Try and introduce it as much as you can. Start those Bible studies. And when you do, please invite me to join in on your new Bible study.
This book makes Bible teaching very simple and enjoyable. And I am convinced that everyone who tries it will love it.
The new book, Enjoy Life Forever, shows clearly that the faithful and discreet slave has been, is, and will continue to give exactly what we need at exactly the right time.
This publication has the potential to help many more honest-hearted ones come to know and love our wonderful Father, Jehovah. May He bless you and your Bible students as you put to use this new tool.
Well, that was very, very encouraging. And we apologize to all those who work in the dental office. We do appreciate your hard work. Well, no doubt many of you are experiencing similar blessings as you are conducting Bible studies in this wonderful new tool. If you're not presently conducting a Bible study, why not make it a matter of earnest prayer to Jehovah? Because there's no experience quite like having a Bible study in this wonderful new publication. Well, for the past several years, a unique feature of our annual meeting program has been a new so-called epic edition of the Become Jehovah's Friend series. We call it an epic because it's longer than the usual episodes. We're now pleased to present Become Jehovah's Friend, Does God Answer Prayers?
Hey, Sophia, we know you're in there.
Please, Jehovah, make it stop.
What a leader. Let's go.
All right, class. Today we're going to discuss... Sophia, you're late.
I'm sorry. I was...
Never mind. We'll talk about this later. Ooh. Okay. That's enough. Sophia, take your seat. Today, we're going to discuss the difference between division and long division. Okay, class, here are the results from yesterday's test. Good work, Sophia.
Hey, Angela, what'd you get?
I don't care.
Whoa, D plus? Well, at least there's a plus.
Whatever. What are you looking at? Oops, I didn't see you there. It's like you're invisible. Oh, what's this? No! See you tomorrow. Okay. Let me help. Sometimes they pick on me too.
It was amazing. And then Miss Wilson said that I could hold the bunny, but I had to be very gentle.
Really?
I named him Fred. But I didn't get to hold him for very long.
I'm pretty much a bunny expert now.
Oh, is everything all right, honey?
See you tomorrow.
I'm fine.
Okay, let's talk about something very important. Prayer. Caleb, what are some things that you can pray for?
Well, I can pray for things that make me happy. Like a helicopter. Or a mountain of ice cream. Without the bellyache. And Fred!
I see. But tell me, when we pray before bedtime, what do we pray for?
We thank Jehovah for the good things he made, like animals, the stars, and the ocean. And God's kingdom. And to help our brothers and sisters.
That's right. You can pray for your brothers and sisters. And remember, they are praying for you too. We know that when we pray for the right things, Jehovah hears us.
Then why doesn't he answer my prayers?
Oh, what's wrong, Sophia? You can tell us.
There's a girl at school. She's so mean to me.
Oh, no. Oh, honey, it's okay.
I prayed for it to stop, but nothing's happened. Is Jehovah mad at me?
No, my dear. Jehovah isn't mad at you.
Maybe Jehovah can't see me.
No.
There is someone in the Bible who felt the same way you do. Her name was Hannah. Hannah loved Jehovah very much.
Hey, wait for me!
But someone named Penina was very mean to her.
It's so nice to see the children play, isn't it?
She had a bully too?
Yes.
We're ready to eat. Here's your portion, Hannah. And Penina, here's yours.
She was very jealous of Hannah.
I'll get some water.
You think you're so special, Hannah? Then why hasn't Jehovah given you any children?
Are you okay, Hannah? Why are you so sad?
Others could not understand why Hannah was so upset. Because the pain was in her heart. So she talked to the one who would understand.
Oh, Jehovah, please see me. Remember me and do not forget me. Please, give me a child. If you do, I will give him to you all his life to serve you.
What are you doing? Why are you drunk?
I'm not drunk. I'm under great stress.
Oh.
I've been praying for Jehovah to help me.
Go in peace, and may Jehovah give you what you've asked for.
Do you know why Hannah felt better, even though her prayer wasn't answered yet?
Why?
Because Hannah knew Jehovah heard her prayer.
When Jehovah listens to your prayers, he really listens. And he knows just what we need, even better than we do.
But how does he answer them?
In lots of different ways. Sometimes we just have to wait and see.
Because he's busy?
No, because it can be hard for us to see the answer. Let's talk about what you can pray for.
And what you can do tomorrow at school to work along with those prayers.
I know that Angela and the other girls are going to be mean to me. But please help me to be like Hannah tomorrow. Help me to be strong like her. And
Then she went to the tabernacle and Eli was there. He was the high priest. What do you want, Angela?
Oh, I was just wondering if you had a pen I could borrow.
What do I do?
Jehovah heard her prayer.
Jehovah, it's me, Caleb. Please help Sophia.
And please, help Sophia be strong at school today.
Watch over the children in our congregation, like Caleb and Sophia.
Please, watch over our children. Help our children make you proud, Jehovah.
Please, Jehovah, give our children the strength they need to face
Jehovah,
prayer.
Please, I need your help.
We ask you this prayer in Jesus' name.
Amen.
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 What? Are you gonna cry?
Stop, Angela. You're being mean. And if you keep being mean, I'm going to tell.
No, you won't.
Yes, I will. You can't tell me what to do. Let's go, Zoe.
That's my sister.
So brave! How did you do that?
I prayed for courage and Jehovah helped me. Hannah gave birth to a son and named him Samuel because, as she said,
it is from Jehovah that I have asked him. There is no one holy like Jehovah. There is no one but you.
Thank you, Jehovah.
Well, that was truly spiritual food at the proper time. And while it will touch the hearts of all of our young ones, I think that message is something we all need to hear and take to heart at this time. Well, now we have the privilege to hear three scriptural talks by members of the governing body. We'll first enjoy a talk by our dear brother, David Splain, entitled The Way of Holiness.
Incredible. That's the only way to describe it. The word had gone out that the Jews who had been captives in Babylon were free to leave and to return to their homeland, Israel. Now, you all know why that was incredible, because Babylon never released its captives. But Babylon had been overthrown, and the new administration had said that the Jews were free to go. Only Jehovah could have been responsible for that. So, every family head had a decision to make: to leave Babylon or to stay behind. Now, you might say, there was no decision to make at all. That's not a hard decision. But wait, hold it. Most of the Jews had been born in Babylon, and most of their parents had been born in Babylon. It was the only home they knew. Their roots were there. And according to certain records, some of them had got prosperous. Some of them had got wealthy. There are records of Jews buying and selling precious gems and other luxury items. So, one says, I can't leave Babylon. My business partner is a Babylonian, and the business is doing really well, and there'd be no market for the products we sell in Israel. Another would say, my son married a Babylonian woman, and they just had a baby. Our first grandchild. He's so cute, I can't leave now. So on the one hand, you have these material benefits from remaining in Babylon. But on the other hand, the ability of the Jews to worship Jehovah freely was severely limited. It said that there were 50 pagan temples in the capital alone, but there was no temple of Jehovah there. And the Levites weren't able to follow the law of Moses properly. They could only do so to a limited degree. So you had material advantages to staying, but the spiritual blessings that awaited those who chose to leave were going to be immense. And for spiritually minded Jews, it was no contest, because they wanted to leave Babylon and reestablish pure worship in the promised land, in Israel. And so, if they were physically able to do so, they would leave Babylon and travel to Jerusalem, a city most of them had never seen, a city in ruins. But Jehovah promised to make the trip from Babylon to Jerusalem as easy as possible. And to confirm that and to get a little picture in our minds, we're going to read a series of four different scriptures. And each scripture is going to add a little detail to what Jehovah had in mind. So the first one is found in Isaiah chapter 40, verses 3 and 4. And I'll wait a moment because it'd be good if we could read this together. This is Isaiah chapter 40, the well-known words of verses 3 and 4. A voice of one calling in the wilderness, clear up the way of Jehovah. Make a straight highway through the desert. A straight highway through the desert for our God. Let every valley be raised up, and every mountain and hill be made low. The rough ground must become level, and the rugged ground a valley plain. You know, every time I read these words, I think of Brother Cary Barber. He must have loved this passage, because very often in his prayers, he would quote this passage word for word. Good memories of Brother Barber. But now, it talks about making a straight highway through the desert. If some of you have gone to the Ramapo Project, you know what site work is all about. How would you like to have the construction committee in Ramapo take that job on? Make a straight highway through the desert. When you come to a mountain, you've got to level it. You come to a valley, you've got to bring it up. That would be quite a job. I think they have enough on their plate. They don't need to worry about this kind of site work. But this was going to be a big job. But in the end, it would be a lot easier to travel on a straight highway than to go up and down a mountain or down a valley. And it would be a lot faster, too. So we know that there's going to be a straight highway between Babylon and Jerusalem. What else can we learn? Isaiah 57 and verse 14. Verse 14 says, it will be said, build up a road, prepare the way, and here it comes, remove any obstacle from the way of my people. So now we have two details. It's going to be a straight highway through the desert, and all of the obstacles are going to be cleared away. But now, most highways have a name. Some of them are named after famous people. Others have a number. Does this special highway have a name? It does. And we go to Isaiah 35, 8 to 10, to find that name. I'm giving you a real workout this morning, but we have to do this to put it all together. Isaiah 35, verses 8 to 10. And a highway will be there, yes, a way, called, here it comes, the way of holiness. The unclean one will not travel on it. It is reserved for the one walking on the way. No one foolish will stray onto it. No lion will be there, and no vicious wild beasts will come on it. They will not be found there. Only the repurchased ones will walk there. So what's the name? What's the special name of this highway? The Way of Holiness. Isn't that a nice name for a highway? Rattlesnakes, bears, foxes, and cougars are not allowed. I don't care how cute you think they are, they're not allowed on this special highway. Now, what else can we learn about this special highway? Today, you don't know who's traveling in the car next to yours. It could be somebody who has no business driving a car. The driver could be drunk. He could be on drugs. But on this highway, the unclean one is not permitted. Those who would break God's laws are not permitted to travel on that highways. Well, we're talking about the highway between Babylon and Jerusalem, and no doubt unclean ones among the Jews wouldn't be interested in going back to Israel anyway. They were probably very much at home with the idolatry of Babylon. Remember, their forefathers were no strangers to idolatry. So only those who were clean and acceptable in Jehovah's eyes were welcome to travel from Babylon back to Jerusalem. Now let's be clear. We don't know whether there was any literal road work done on the road between Babylon and Israel. It may be all figurative, but there could have been some road work done. Notice what Jehovah told the Jews to do in Jeremiah chapter 31 and verse 21. And you'd say, why would Jehovah say all of these things if it was all to be ignored literally? Jeremiah 31 and verse 21, he says, set up road markers for yourself and put up signposts. Pay attention to the highway, the way that you have to go. Return, O Virgin of Israel, return to these cities of yours. So no doubt, the first groups to use the road would remove obstacles and level things out the best they could so that those who followed would have an easier journey. So now what have we learned? What have we gleaned from this series of scriptures? First, there's a highway through the desert. We've also learned that it's to be cleared of obstacles. It has a special name, the Way of Holiness. And there were to be signposts so that those who traveled the road wouldn't get lost and maybe stray onto some other road. Now, what was the goal? Why did Jehovah want this road to be prepared so nicely? To make it as easy as possible for the Jews to leave Babylon and go back to Israel and reestablish pure worship. Did it work? Tens of thousands of men, women, and children responded to the call, the invitation, and with Jehovah's help, they arrived safely at their destination. Well, you might be thinking, this is all very nice, but what does it have to do with me? What does it have to do with us today? Plenty. Because today, not tens of thousands, but millions of men, women, and children are responding to the command, the urgent command, get out of her, get out of Babylon the Great. And the situation is different from the situation of the Jews in ancient times because they had a choice. They could remain in Babylon and still serve Jehovah. But people today have no choice. They must leave Babylon the Great. Their life depends on it. Now, without looking for a type and anti-type and trying to fit everything in very neatly in this arrangement, we can say that there are some similarities between what happened to the Jews in ancient times and what is happening today. Because in a sense, when you start to study the Bible with someone, you are pointing him in the direction of the way of holiness. Now, some start studying and they start traveling on the road and then they turn back. But others keep going and they become dedicated, baptized disciples of Christ. Some travel in the fast lane. They make rapid progress. Others sort of take the far right lane and they poke along, but they keep making progress. And as long as they keep making progress, we'll study with them. Some break down, and that calls for roadside assistance. But it's easier to travel on the way of holiness today than it ever has been. And friends, this is partly due to the spiritual sight work that was started centuries ago. I'm going to repeat that. It is easier to travel the highway of holiness today because of the spiritual sight work that was started hundreds of years ago, long before Babylon the Great fell, long before the road was open for travelers. Now picture this. It's the 16th century. With shovel in hand, you are about to start sight work on the way of holiness. There's a mountain ahead of you, a mountain of ignorance. And you realize that if you're going to start to level that mountain, the first thing you're going to have to do is get the Bible into the hands of the people. For years, the Bible was only in Latin, and mostly educated people could read it. And even some of the clergy only knew enough Latin to conduct church services, but otherwise they couldn't understand it. Well, if you've been to our beautiful museum, some of you have taken a tour recently, you know that translators in many countries risk their freedom and even their lives to put the Bible into the language of the common people. And then printers produced those translations. And some of them used an assumed name because if they got caught printing a Bible, they could be arrested, and even worse. So the mountain had to be leveled a shovelful at a time, one Bible at a time to reduce that mountain on the way of holiness. To get the Bible into the hands of the people, William Tyndall arranged to have thousands of copies of his translation smuggled into England in bales of cotton and other goods. This was dangerous. Tyndall's translation was banned in England, and if you merely possessed a copy of the Bible, that could bring you a stint in the Tower of London, or worse. But despite desperate attempts to stop work on the way of holiness, more copies of Tyndall's Bible were printed than the clergy could ever destroy. By the way, you'll be interested in a comment that Tyndall made in his comments on the book of Genesis, 1530 translation of the book of Genesis. He wrote, "Jehovah is God's name. Neither is any creature so called. As oft as thou seest Lord in capital letters, it is in Hebrew, Jehovah." Early on, the name Jehovah was given some recognition. Well, with the Bible becoming more available and to the people, you'd expect that students of the Bible would want to share their research with others, and that was the case. In the years leading up to 1919, when Babylon the Great fell, more road work was done. And so we have men who share the fruitage of the research in tracts, in books, publications of all kinds, because they want the people to know. They want to reduce that mountain of ignorance. For example, about 1835, a Bible student by the name of Henry Grew wrote a pamphlet on the immortality of the soul. And in that pamphlet, Grew explained from the Bible that immortality is a reward for faithfulness. We're not born with it. Now, he published the tract anonymously, because he knew there'd be trouble. And later on, there was trouble for Henry Grew. Well, he publishes a tract. But 2 years later, another Bible student, George Storrs, is riding in a train. And he looks down, and he sees a tract there. And it's Henry Grew's tract on the immortality of the soul. He reads it, and he becomes convinced that man doesn't have an immortal soul. So what does he do? He picks up a shovel, and he starts working on the road, the way of holiness. In 1842, he gave a series of lectures on the intriguing theme, Are the Wicked Immortal? And he later published those lectures. Do you know how many copies were produced? 200,000 copies of that series of lectures. So that was decent roadwork on that way of holiness. Well, Storrs knew that he didn't have the whole truth on every subject. And in 1847, he made quite an interesting statement. It'd be interesting for us. He says, "We do well to remember that we have just emerged from the dark ages of the church." And notice this, "It would not be strange if we should find some Babylonish garments still worn by us." Well, he was right. Babylon still had influence in those days. Well, we know that George Storrs had an influence on Charles Taze Russell. And what do we know about Brother Russell and his associates? They weren't the first to discover that the Trinity and the immortality of the soul are false doctrines, or even that Christ's presence would be invisible to the human eye. They benefited from the careful preparatory work that other road workers had done in the past. So, translators, printers, and Bible students were doing spiritual sight work. And we might say that Brother Russell and his associates put the final touches on that way of holiness. Well, Babylon the Great fell in 1919, and then the way of holiness was opened for travelers. But Brother Russell died in 1916. Did he miss it? Did he miss the inauguration of the road? I don't think so. He didn't have a bird's eye view of the opening of the road. He had a heaven's eye view. Because Brother Russell and his associates who had finished their earthly course, they were able to look down from the heavens. And can you imagine how excited they were when they saw the first travelers set foot on the way of holiness? It must have been very exciting for them indeed. And it wouldn't be surprising if Brother Russell and his associates were firmly involved in the maintenance program of that way of holiness today. Because every good road needs ongoing maintenance. The way of holiness is open, but maintenance on that way of holiness goes on. And what's the goal? It's to make it as easy as possible for people to identify Babylon the Great and to leave Babylon the Great. That is the goal. Well, take the Bible, for example. There were Bible translations in 1919, but some of them were in archaic language that was hard to understand, and most of them didn't give the divine name the place of honor that it deserved. But now we have the New World Translation. What a blessing that has proved to be. It's so clear, and you don't have to mortgage the house to buy a copy, which was probably the case in the 16th century. And since 1919, there's been an abundance of spiritual food to make it easier for people to come into the truth. Now, just think of this. In 1919, Babylon the Great fell. But what else happened in 1919? What provision did Jehovah make for these people? The faithful and discreet slave was appointed in that same year. And the slave didn't waste any time to start producing literature that was going to make it easier for people to come into the truth. 1919, the slave is appointed. By 1921, you have a brand new publication, The Harp of God. And it was especially designed for beginners and to make it easy for people to study and read and come into the truth. And that was necessary because in 1921, There was a shortage of teachers, of publishers who could conduct Bible studies with people. So you really needed something simple. And comparatively speaking, that Harp of God was simple. Now, there were very few publishers in those days, just a few thousand. But they were workers. They did a tremendous job. Do you realize that before the Harp of God went out of print, almost 6 million copies in 22 languages had been circulated? So this is evidence that maintenance work on the way of holiness had begun right after the road opened. Well, I doubt that very many in this audience have come into the truth through the Harp of God. Anybody here? I don't think so. What publication brought you into the truth? What publication helped you to identify the way of holiness? Was it The Truth Shall Make You Free? Let God Be True? The Truth That Leads to Eternal Life? You Can Live Forever? The Knowledge Book? Enjoy Life Forever? Teach Us? What does the Bible teach us? Or is it our fine new publication, Enjoy Life Forever? All of these publications have been used to help people to break free from Babylon the Great. And this is proof positive that maintenance on the way of holiness is ongoing. This roadwork continues, and it gets better and better. Are you studying the Bible with someone with the help of Enjoy Life Forever? If you are, you're pointing that person to the way of holiness. So don't be afraid to offer studies, as Brother Sanderson mentioned. Business associates, relatives, schoolmates, anybody you can think of, offer Bible studies, and you'll be surprised at who will take you up on it. And as you do, keep in mind that while the road has been made easier for travelers, setting foot on that road takes courage and effort. So let's be ready to help those who are willing to respond. Millions have already taken that road, and it's our hope that millions more will do so before the end of this system of things. And we wish them all safe travels.
Well, we sincerely thank you, Brother Splane, for that fascinating discussion about the way of holiness. You know, I once had the opportunity to go to an auction house and actually hold in my hands the Tyndale Pentateuch of 1530, of which there are only a very few known copies. But sadly, I didn't have $650,000 in my wallet on that day, nor a house to mortgage. So we had to pass. But in our museum, we do have a facsimile. And won't it be a wonderful day when we can reopen our museums to tours from all of our brothers outside, and they'll be able to come back and see those wonderful things. Thank you so much, Brother Splane. Well, now we have the pleasure to hear from another member of our governing body, Brother Jeffrey Jackson. He has a very intriguing theme. Are you there?
Are you there? Is your name there? Is your name written in the book of life? What book of life? Well, in Malachi chapter 3, we notice that it refers to a book of remembrance. And this book has a record of all those who fear Jehovah and treasure his name. Yes, this book of remembrance is a record of all those who are in line to receive everlasting life. So all of us want to have our names written in that book, don't we? But if we do have our book name in that book, does that mean automatically that we will receive everlasting life? No. We remember what Jehovah said to Moses as recorded in Exodus 32. There he said, "Anyone who sins against me, I will wipe out from my book." So names can be erased from this book of life. It's as if our names are written in this book of life in pencil. So all of us surely want to make sure that our names remain in this book of life right through to the time that they are written permanently in the book, in pen, as it were. But whose names are in this book of life? We're going to consider together five different groups of persons, some of whom have their names in the book of life and others don't. So let's watch this presentation that discusses these five groups. The first group, those who have been selected to rule with Jesus in heaven. Are their names written in this book of life? According to Philippians 4:3, the answer is yes. But even though they have been anointed with Holy Spirit, they still need to remain faithful in order to have their names written permanently in this book. The second group, the great crowd of Armageddon survivors. Are the names of these faithful ones now written in the book of life? Yes. What about after they survive Armageddon? Will their names still be in the book of life? Yes. How do we know? At Matthew 25:46, Jesus says that these sheep-like ones depart into everlasting life. But does that mean they are granted everlasting life at the beginning of the thousand-year reign? No. Revelation 7:17 tells us that Jesus will guide them to springs of waters of life. So they don't immediately receive everlasting life. However, their names are written in the book of life, in pencil as it were. The third group, the goats who will be destroyed at Armageddon. Their names are not in the book of life. 2 Thessalonians 1:9 tells us, these very ones will undergo the judicial punishment of everlasting destruction. The same could be said of those who have deliberately sinned against the Holy Spirit. They too receive everlasting destruction, not everlasting life. So the first three groups are the anointed, the great crowd, and the goats. Of these three, only two are found in the book of life. Now let's talk about two more groups. Those who will be resurrected in the new world. First though, let's read together Acts 24:15. There the apostle Paul says, I have hope toward God, which hope these men also look forward to, that there is going to be a resurrection of both the righteous and the unrighteous. So the fourth group are the righteous who have died. These include some of our loved ones. Are their names written in the book of life? Yes. Revelation 17:8 tells us that this book has been in existence since the founding of the world. Jesus referred to Abel as living from the founding of the world. So we can assume that his name was the first name written in that book. Since that time, millions of other righteous ones have had their names added to this book. Now, here's an important question. When these righteous ones died, were their names taken out of the book of life? No. They're still living in Jehovah's memory. Remember, Jesus said that Jehovah is a God not of the dead, but of the living, for they are all living to him. The righteous will be restored to life here on earth with their names still written in the book of life. They did good things before they died, so that is why they will be part of the resurrection of the righteous ones. No doubt some of them will receive privileges, such as serving as princes in all the earth. Finally, let's talk about the resurrection of the unrighteous. For the most part, the unrighteous didn't have an opportunity to develop a relationship with Jehovah. They did not live righteous lives, So that's why they are called unrighteous. When these unrighteous ones are resurrected, are their names written in the book of life? No. But their being resurrected gives them an opportunity to have their names eventually written in the book of life. These unrighteous ones will need a lot of help. In their former life, some of them practiced horrible, vile things. So they'll need to learn to live by Jehovah's standards. To accomplish this, God's kingdom will sponsor the greatest education program in all human history. Who will teach these unrighteous persons? Those who have their names written in pencil in the book of life, the great crowd, and the resurrected righteous ones. How can these unrighteous ones have their names written in the book of life? They will need to develop a relationship with Jehovah and dedicate their lives to Him. But will all the unrighteous accept that opportunity? No. Remember, all these unrighteous ones will be under the careful watch of Jesus and His fellow judges. Isaiah 65:20 tells us that those who refuse to accept this help will be removed. No one will be allowed to cause any ruin in the new world. So any who display a wicked attitude during the 1,000 years will be removed. With all these facts in mind then, let's now read together John 5:28 and 29. Jesus said, "Do not be amazed at this, for the hour is coming in which all those in the memorial tombs will hear His voice and come out, those who did good things to a resurrection of life, and those who practice vile things to a resurrection of judgment." Now, for a few moments, let's think about those verses in John chapter 5, 28 and 29. Up to now, we have understood Jesus' words to mean that the resurrected ones will do good things and some will do vile things after their resurrection. But notice there in verse 29, Jesus didn't say they will do these good things or they will practice vile things. He used the past tense, didn't he? Because he said they did good things and they practiced vile things. So this would indicate to us that these deeds or actions were committed by these ones prior to their death and before they would be resurrected. So that makes sense, doesn't it? Because no one's going to be allowed to practice vile things in the new world. So what did Jesus mean when he mentioned these two factors? Well, for a start, we could say the righteous ones still, when they're resurrected, have their names written in the book of life. It's true. Romans chapter 6, verse 7 says that when someone dies, his sins are canceled. But take note of this, not their record of faithfulness. That's not canceled. So the righteous ones are resurrected into the new world, and their names are still in the book of life. Of course, they need to remain faithful during the 1,000 years to keep their names in that book of life. But what about the unrighteous ones? Well, these are the ones who did vile things before they died. So when they're resurrected, they don't have their names in the book of life. It's not a resurrection to life. It's a resurrection to judgment. Now, why do we say that? Because there we could say the word judgment is not referring to a condemnation. It's not referring to something that is totally negative. It's true. At times, the word judgment can have that meaning. But in the context of these verses, it seems that Jesus is using the word judgment in a more neutral sense. So it means more an evaluation or a probation period. So the unrighteous ones will have an opportunity to accept this wonderful education work that's going to be done in the new world. And during that time, they will be evaluated. And if they dedicate their lives to Jehovah, then their names will be written into the Book of Life. Now, at this point, you're probably thinking, is this an adjustment to our understanding? Yes, it is. So now you think, can you just run that past me again? Well, let's look at this little summary that will help us.
When Jesus spoke in John 5:29 of those who would receive a resurrection of life, he was referring to those who did good things before they died, those whose names are written in the Book of Life. The resurrection of judgment at John 5:29 involves the resurrection of those who practice vile things before they died and whose names are not yet written in the Book of Life. But whether previously righteous or unrighteous, all these resurrected ones will need to obey the laws in the new scrolls referred to in Revelation 20, verse 12. There it says, "I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne, and scrolls were opened. But another scroll was opened. It is the scroll of life. The dead were judged out of those things written in the scrolls, according to their deeds." Yes, they will be judged individually according to their deeds. But what deeds? Will it be their deeds committed before they died? No. Otherwise, the resurrection of the unrighteous would have been a pointless waste. Here then, their deeds cannot be deeds from their former life. Rather, this verse must refer to their deeds in response to their training in the new world. Even such faithful men as Noah, Samuel, David, and Daniel will have to learn about the sacrifice of Christ and exercise faith in it. All of this also helps us to understand an amazing prophecy in the book of Daniel. Let's turn there. It's Daniel 12, verses 1 through 3. There it says, "During that time, Michael, who is Jesus Christ, will stand up, that is at Armageddon. The great prince who is standing since 1914 in behalf of your people. And there will occur a time of distress, that is the great tribulation, such as has not occurred since there came to be a nation until that time. And during that time, your people will escape, everyone who is found written down in the book." And this refers to the great crowd. But notice what follows. "And many of those asleep in the dust of the earth will wake up, some to everlasting life, and others to reproach and to everlasting contempt."
So looking at Daniel chapter 12 and verse 2, it seems appropriate too that we adjust our understanding of this verse. Notice there it speaks about people waking up in the form of a resurrection, and this occurs after what's mentioned in verse 1, after the great crowd survived the great tribulation. So this obviously is talking about a literal resurrection of the righteous and unrighteous. But what does it mean when it mentions there in verse 2 that some will be raised to everlasting life and others to everlasting contempt? What does that really mean? Well, when we notice that, we notice it's a little different from what Jesus said in John chapter 5. He spoke about life and judgment. But now here it's talking about everlasting life and everlasting contempt. So that term everlasting helps us to realize that this is talking about the final outcome after these ones have had an opportunity to accept the education. So those who are resurrected, who make good use of this education, well, they will continue on and ultimately receive everlasting life. But then on the other hand, any who refuse to accept the benefits of that education, they will be judged as worthy of eternal destruction. Now, let's finally read verse 3.
And those having insight will shine as brightly as the expanse of heaven, and those bringing the many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. This is speaking about the massive education work that will be done in the new world. The glorified anointed ones will shine brightly as they work closely with Jesus to direct the education work that will bring the many to righteousness. What a joy it will be for them to take part in this amazing work in their role as priests. They will assist with the healing of the nations. And what a privilege it will be to see obedient humans become free from the burden of sin and death and gain perfection.
Of course, we have to realize that at that time on earth, there won't be just resurrected ones, will there? There'll be the survivors of Armageddon and any children that are born in the new world. These ones will ultimately attain to perfection. So is that when they get their names written, as it were, in ink in the book? Not quite yet. Why not? Well, because perfection doesn't automatically mean that someone would get everlasting life. Remember the case of Adam and Eve. They were perfect, but before they could attain to everlasting life, they had to prove their obedience to Jehovah. Yes, so we realize then that in the case of Adam and Eve, they failed. So a question is raised with regard to all these perfect ones on the earth at that time, the resurrected ones, the survivors of the Great Tribulation, as well as any children that will have been born. Will they stand faithful? Will they continue to support Jehovah's sovereignty? Or will some of them be like Adam and Eve, be perfect, but then unfaithful? Well, the book of Revelation helps us to understand that to answer that question, Satan is released from the symbolic prison, and he has an opportunity to test the integrity of Jehovah's servants. So each person on earth will have a personal opportunity to show where they stand on the issue of universal sovereignty. And their individual response will show whether or not their names should be written permanently in the Book of Life. Some, an unspecified number, will turn their backs on Jehovah and will not support his sovereignty. What will happen to those? Well, Revelation 20, verse 15 tells us, doesn't it? Anyone who isn't found written in the Book of Life will receive everlasting destruction. But this is the good news. The majority of perfect mankind will find themselves passing the final test. Yes, and their names will be written permanently in the Book of Life. Isn't that exciting to think about what's going to happen in the future? Yes, now is the time Jehovah is preparing his people for this massive education work that is going to take place in the new world. So now's the time for each one of us to think about that question. Are you there? Is your name in the Book of Life? Yes, may your name be found written in Jehovah's Book of Life, and may it remain there forever.
Well, we sincerely thank you, Brother Jackson, for that very upbuilding and strengthening talk. I have to say, when the governing body discussed that information, all of us felt so heartwarming to think of the time when the anointed will really be able to work with people on the earth and help them come to perfection. What a wonderful, wonderful moment that will be. Well, now we're primed for an interesting discussion presented by another member of the governing body, Brother Kenneth Cook. His theme is, Are You Heeding the Warnings?
We live in a time that will end in final judgment by means of God's kingdom. Jesus described this time when he gave his disciples a prophetic sign regarding his invisible presence at the conclusion of the system of things. Since his prophecy applies to our day, we should be very interested in its details. It also points to a bright future for those who heed its warnings. We find the prophecy in Matthew chapters 24 and 25, Mark chapter 13, and Luke chapter 21. After revealing many of the things that would occur, Jesus provided warnings for his disciples by means of three parables. First, he gave the parable of the virgins, then the parable of the talents, and finally, the parable of the sheep and the goats. The parables show how a person's behavior will affect his or her final judgment. The two parables apply to those, the first two, to those with a heavenly hope, and the third parable applies to those with an earthly hope. Yet no matter what our hope may be, all of us can learn from the warnings found in Jesus' parables. Let's start with the third parable. In the parable of the sheep and goats, Jesus described the final judgment for sheep-like ones and goat-like ones during the Great Tribulation. As Jehovah's appointed judging king, Jesus will be completely righteous in the judgment that he gives. As a thorough judge, he is already observing the actions, attitudes, and speech of all people, including how they treat his anointed brothers. By the start of the Great Tribulation, Jesus will have identified those who are sheep-like or goat-like in their conduct and attitude. From that time onward, those who are goat-like will not seek to change. However, those who are sheep-like and who have the hope of living forever on earth will need to remain faithful in order for Jehovah to keep their names in the book of life. Then, just before Armageddon, God's Son will pass final judgment on all those then living here on earth. Persons who are judged to be righteous will enter into everlasting life on earth. What a marvelous reward for those who keep their integrity. Although Jesus' third parable applies to those who hope to live on the earth, anointed ones too must listen to the warning message found in that parable. How so? Because Jesus is observing their actions, attitudes, and speech as well. They too must prove to be righteous and faithful. Still, a few questions remain. For example, how are anointed Christians undergoing a period of judgment today? And what warnings did Jesus provide for them? We find the answers to both questions in the first two parables of Matthew chapter 25. To prepare us for this review, let's briefly consider how anointed Christians are chosen. We'll start by looking at a lesson from ancient times. When the priesthood was established in ancient Israel, Jehovah decided who would serve as high priest, as well as the underpriests at the tabernacle. Exodus 28:1 tells us that he selected Aaron along with his sons. No one could rightly question Jehovah's choice, and those chosen had to prove worthy of their calling. Similar to what he did back then, Jehovah chooses those who will serve as priests in heaven. He began by selecting Jesus to serve as high priest. Although Jesus was a perfect man, he did not choose that role for himself. We read at Hebrews 5 and verse 5 that the Christ did not glorify himself by becoming a high priest. Likewise, those who will serve as priests in heaven do not choose themselves for this assignment. They are selected by Jehovah and anointed with his Holy Spirit. He knows each one whom he has anointed for this service. How do faithful anointed ones view their heavenly calling? When a person is anointed by God, he or she knows without doubt that it is from Jehovah, and that one accepts Jehovah's choice with gratitude. Instead of feeling proud or haughty, anointed ones strive to imitate Jesus' example of humility. They're helped to do so by keeping in mind the lessons and warnings that are found in Jesus' parables for them. It's noteworthy that just before relating his parables, Jesus spoke about a faithful and discreet slave who would distribute spiritual food at the proper time during the last days. That slave pictures a small group of anointed Christian men today, the governing body. For their faithful service, Jesus said that there would be a reward, but he also provided a warning. He spoke about what would happen if that slave ever lost sight of Jesus' future return and started to mistreat his fellow slaves. If that were to happen, that slave would be viewed as evil and would, as Matthew 24:51 states, be punished with the greatest severity. Please note that Jesus was not prophesying that there would be an evil slave. This is a warning, not a prophecy. What was the warning? That the faithful slave needs to remain watchful. Yet it is not just the faithful and discreet slave who must remain watchful. By means of his parables, Jesus warned that all anointed ones must likewise prove to be discreet, faithful, and watchful. Now, how did Jesus make his point? In the parable of the virgins, Jesus spoke of 10 virgins who went out to meet a bridegroom. They hoped to accompany the bridegroom into his marriage feast. Jesus described 5 of the virgins as discreet and 5 as foolish. The Greek word used for discreet conveys the idea of understanding, forethought, discernment, and wisdom in a practical sense. So, the discreet virgins were wise, and they showed this by being ready when the bridegroom arrived in the middle of the night. They had lamps to light their way. And Matthew 25, verse 4 adds that the discreet virgins took oil in their flasks along with their lamps. So they had the means to keep their lamps burning. Because they proved to be ready, they could follow the bridegroom into his marriage feast. This action depicts genuine anointed ones entering into their heavenly reward. They will be judged as worthy to join the bridegroom Jesus in his heavenly kingdom. But what about the foolish virgins? Well, unlike the discreet virgins, the foolish ones were not ready when the bridegroom arrived. Their lamps died out. As a result, they could not follow the bridegroom and enter into his marriage feast. When they later tried to do so, they heard the bridegroom tell them, "I do not know you." What is the lesson and warning that Jesus was illustrating? He was showing that only anointed Christians who keep on the watch and prove to be ready will follow him into the reward. Notice, though, that Jesus did not say that there would be a large number of foolish ones who would be unprepared when he comes in this way at the great tribulation. Here, too, this is a warning, not a prophecy. We're not focused on 5 of them being discreet and 5 of them being foolish. Jesus was simply letting anointed ones know what would happen if they failed to keep on the watch. That is a sobering thought. Whether our hope is heavenly or earthly, all true Christians should listen to the warning found in the parable of the virgins. We must keep on the watch and always be ready to carry out our service to God. Now, after using the parable of the virgins to emphasize the need to be discreet, Jesus related a parable that highlights the need to be faithful. It is the parable of the talents, or money. In this parable, Jesus tells about two slaves who were faithful to their master and one slave who was not. How did the two slaves prove to be faithful? Well, the faithful slaves worked hard to increase the money that their master entrusted to their care just before he traveled abroad. When he returned, the faithful slaves had more to give back than what they had received, and they were blessed for doing so. But what about the third slave, the sluggish one? What did he do with what he had received? Well, the sluggish slave buried what he had been given and failed to increase his master's talents. When the master returned, that slave had nothing additional to give to his master. He even tried to blame the master, calling him a demanding man. As a result, that slave did not receive greater blessings. More than that, what he had been given was taken away from him, and he was cast out of the master's household. What did the master's response mean for each of his slaves, and whom do they picture today? The two faithful slaves depict anointed Christians who proved to be valued members of the master's household. The master, Jesus, invites them to enter into the joy of their master. That joy pictures their heavenly reward. On the other hand, the bad example of the sluggish slave provides a warning for anointed ones. How so? If anointed ones do not remain alert and watchful, they could become self-satisfied with what they have received. They might not extend themselves in kingdom service. They could lose sight of their responsibilities and fail to do as 2 Peter 1 verse 10 urges, where they are told to make the calling and choosing sure for themselves. If any of them become like the sluggish slave, they would not be approved to enter into the heavenly kingdom and share in the joy of the master. Once again, Jesus was providing a warning, not a prophecy. Clearly, all anointed Christians must strive to be both discreet and faithful. Whether our hope is heavenly or earthly, all true Christians are determined to remain faithful to Jehovah. We are secure in our relationship with Him. We're not concerned if Jehovah chooses to anoint some faithful ones in more recent years. We recall what Jesus said regarding the 11th hour workers in His illustration about the vineyard. You can read about it in Matthew chapter 20. Those who were invited to work in the vineyard later in the day received the same reward from the master of the vineyard as those who were invited to work in it earlier in the day. Likewise, Jehovah and His Son know how many anointed ones to call in order to complete the number of 144,000 before the end comes. But no matter when they are selected, each anointed one who is judged to be faithful will receive the heavenly reward. Now, with that in mind, let's consider Matthew chapter 24 and verses 40 and 41. And as we do, we'll see how these verses connect to Jesus' parables for the anointed. Matthew 24, verse 40, it reads, "Then two men will be in the field. One will be taken along and the other abandoned. Two women will be grinding at the handmill. One will be taken along and the other abandoned." Did you notice some similarities to the parables? Jesus spoke of two men working in a field and of two women working at a handmill. Outwardly, they appear to be the same. But in each case, Jesus said that one would be taken along and the other abandoned. He then urged His followers to keep on the watch, therefore, because you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. Jesus said something very similar after relating the parable of the virgins. In both examples, he provided a warning. Since the parable of the virgins applies to anointed Christians, do Jesus' comments about those who are taken along also apply to the anointed? It appears that they do. And here again, Jesus was providing a warning. In his great prophecy regarding the conclusion of the system of things, we find that Jesus lovingly highlights both the good news of the kingdom as well as warning messages for all people, including his followers. Down to this day, our message follows the same pattern. It is both one of salvation as well as one of warning. And we must continue to do all that we can to deliver Jesus' twofold message and help others to act on it while there is still time. Clearly, Jehovah and his Son want us to remain discreet, faithful, and on the watch. So what have we considered? Some of the virgins in Jesus' illustration found out that the door was shut, and they heard the bridegroom tell them, "I do not know you." One of the slaves in Jesus' illustration of the talents did not enter into his master's joy, but was thrown outside into the darkness. Jesus also indicated that not all would be taken along into the heavenly reward. What a serious warning for those who have the heavenly hope. Even so, we are confident that the full number of them will be filled. Truly, this is a time of judgment for all of God's people, including the righteous sheep who yearn to live forever on earth. But there is no reason for any of us to fear the final judgment that is yet ahead. Our loving Heavenly Father promises to give us power beyond what is normal, so that we may, as Luke 21 verse 36 says, succeed in standing before the Son of Man. So then, whether our hope is heavenly or earthly, we must heed the warnings found in Jesus' parables and thereby keep our names written in the book of life.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Cook, for that excellent review of warnings that we need to keep in our minds. Well, did you capture all of the fine points of those three talks? We're now going to pass out the exam sheets. No, just kidding. But if you would like to review those talks carefully, and we know you will, guess what? They're going to be presented to the Worldwide Brotherhood in the January monthly edition of JW Broadcasting. So you all will have the opportunity to carefully review your notes to make sure you got all the fine points in those wonderful, wonderful talks. Well, the governing body has asked that a brief update about the construction of the Ramapo headquarters facility be shared with you at this time. Now, despite the pandemic, we have clearly seen Jehovah's hand on the Ramapo project this year. So please enjoy the following visual update. Before the main project begins, contractors have already been assisting to repair and strengthen an existing stone-faced bridge on the road into the site. When completed, the restoration of this structure will serve as a beautiful feature of the property. More important, Jehovah has greatly blessed the efforts to work through the planning process with the town of Ramapo. That process is now in the final stages of obtaining the necessary permits to start the large new construction project. In the first quarter of 2022, Jehovah willing, contractors will start clearing the site in preparation for earth moving, installation of underground utilities, and readying the locations where the first buildings will be constructed. This in itself will take many months, and we look to Jehovah to bless this key phase that, when concluded, will open up the project for many volunteers to come and share in the work. Much forethought and work has gone into the arrangements needed for feeding, housing, and providing temporary office spaces for all such willing brothers and sisters. The design team is fully engaged in preparing the construction documents. The drawings for some buildings are well advanced. Others are in the concept stage. No doubt, seeing these concept images of the future Ramapo facility is exciting and encouraging to all of you. Well, with all of you, we continue to pray that Jehovah will bless this very exciting theocratic project. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, we have felt Jehovah's loving care as we've received helpful direction just at the right time. Please listen and watch as those who work in the Coordinator's Committee office recount how events unfolded with the pandemic and how Jehovah has guided matters throughout this time.
In January of 2020, we started seeing news reports about a disease outbreak in Wuhan, China. Now at the time, it seemed localized and was not of global concern. But a short time later, the numbers were going up as the virus began to spread. Borders were closing and airports were shutting down.
On January 22nd, the Coordinators Committee received their first letter from a branch about the coronavirus. The letter was from the Korea branch. Soon after that, we wrote to all branches in and around Asia and included guidelines on what to do if they had an outbreak in their territory.
We had dealt with local epidemics before, but nothing like this on a worldwide scale. It was clear that the virus is going to affect almost every aspect of our theocratic operations. And during those first few months of 2020, the organization would be faced with a huge amount of decisions.
You have to realize that this was catching us right in the middle of our activities. Our schedule for the whole year had already been planned. We had shepherding visits to branches, regional conventions, even special conventions. And now we had Gilead graduation and memorial coming up right in front of us. What were we going to do?
One of the first things the governing body decided was that the Coordinators Committee would become the central channel of communication regarding COVID-19.
Meanwhile, the graduation of the 148th class of Gilead was in 2 weeks. Should we have guests come? Should there be a live audience? There was not much time to make these decisions. However, after prayer and discussion, the entire governing body decided not to have a live audience for the Gilead graduation that weekend. That was unheard of.
The next thing we needed to figure out was whether to lock down headquarters at Bethel. I clearly remember it was a Friday night, March 13th. We were getting reports of COVID cases in the congregations around Bethel. And we also knew that the Bethelites would be going out to their congregation and other activities over the weekend. If we were going to do something, we needed to do it quickly.
We called each member of the governing body and explained the situation. And all were unanimous that we should lock down Bethel immediately.
So within the hour, a message went to the entire headquarters and United States Bethel family to stay in. And if you were out, to return to Bethel immediately.
Sometime later, we learned that there were some COVID cases at Patterson. If we had moved ahead, potentially, we could have spread COVID through the whole Bethel family. We really felt Jehovah's protective hand.
The same weekend as the Gilead graduation, the memorial invitation campaign was scheduled to begin. And so branches were asking, is it safe to go door to door and to distribute invitations? What if we can't meet in our kingdom halls?
As the virus had spread in many countries, it became evident that we needed to suspend the public ministry. This was a very serious decision. But when we prayerfully analyzed the situation, we realized we would not be showing respect for the sanctity of life or love of neighbor if we continued house to house. Our preaching work shifted to letter writing and telephone witnessing, and what a huge witness has been given in this way.
It was amazing to me personally when I saw how quickly the brothers could adapt to using Zoom, phone witnessing, letter writing, and instead of it being a huge setback for the work, it was almost as though the work even moved ahead.
We were also having to deal with what to do about our kingdom halls and our meetings.
Initially, some of the brothers were thinking, maybe we could just simply watch the pre-recorded meetings on JW Stream. Well, while that's an excellent provision, if we were going to do this for a long time, it would be wonderful to use a tool that would allow the brothers and sisters to come together virtually, to be able to interact and have that interchange of encouragement. We knew that a few branches had already started using Zoom for congregation meetings, and we wondered, could this tool be used for congregation meetings globally?
So we asked those branches for their recommendations on how we could use this tool further. We got their comments, we did some testing, and then the governing body approved the global use of Zoom for meetings.
At the same time, though, the coordinators committee urgently wanted to help those congregations to arrange dignified Zoom meetings. And so within a week, technical and theocratic guidelines were released to all congregations.
And shortly after that, tens of thousands of Zoom licenses were purchased and then provided to many congregations as part of the disaster relief arrangement.
However, not all publishers could use Zoom due to lack of internet.
So in the days leading up to the campaign, the governing body provided direction to all branches on how to handle those exact situations. They also announced that the memorial talk itself would be made available on JW.org.
So one branch wrote in and asked if they could use television and radio broadcasting. And we thought, that's a good idea. Let's try it. Once we saw how well it worked in that country, television and radio were approved for all branches in Africa only 2 days before the memorial.
How thrilling it was for many friends in Africa to find out even moments before the broadcast began that they would be able to commemorate the memorial simultaneously with their brothers and sisters throughout the country.
To have the memorial without being able to meet together was so different for all of us. Can you imagine? For the 2021 memorial, there was an all-time peak of 21,367,603. Clearly, we have seen Jehovah's blessing on these arrangements.
While all these new arrangements were being made at a rapid pace, the usual work of the Coordinators Committee office didn't stop because of the pandemic. We still had to deal with the King of the North persecuting our brothers. We still had disasters and many other things to contend with.
In fact, we handled twice as many disasters in the 2020 service year in the middle of the pandemic than we did in 2018. On a daily basis, we saw clear evidence that we are living in the last days.
We had to come up with guidelines to help branches determine what aspects of relief work could be postponed, and at the same time ensure that urgent or necessary work went ahead safely. While there's no doubt that the pandemic complicated disaster relief efforts considerably, it was so faith-strengthening to see that the governing body refused to allow those complications to prevent them from caring for our brothers.
In addition to the impact these disasters had on our brothers, in some countries our brothers couldn't even get enough food for their daily needs. This could have been because of government restrictions, supply issues, or other circumstances that wouldn't allow the brothers to work. Literally, the branches had to arrange to provide their daily bread.
Branches were encouraged to establish disaster relief committees to care for the needs on a local level. Reminders were provided to help families try to prepare a reserve of food, if at all possible, in case the situation became worse.
Of course, the virus affected not only our meetings at the Kingdom Hall, but also our circuit assemblies, regional conventions, and special conventions. So the governing body decided to cancel all live regional and special conventions for 2020. That led to a landmark convention program on JW.org that the entire Brotherhood enjoyed. That same week in March, we approved that a JW Broadcasting news release about the coronavirus outbreak be developed. So interviews and scripts were prepared during that Gilead graduation weekend, and the program was recorded and released the following week. The governing body updates have been an important way for us to shepherd the entire organization during the pandemic.
Well, once vaccinations became more prevalent, we faced another challenge. The United States branch was struggling to get vaccines for those in the Bethel family who wanted them.
So in early April 2021, we called together a meeting. We had all the key individuals there from the various departments, and everyone was given an assignment. And within 2 weeks, we had enough vaccine to vaccinate everyone in the U.S. Bethel family who chose to be vaccinated.
Well, about a week later, we sent a letter to all branches, encouraging them to investigate the availability of vaccines for special full-time servants. We were especially concerned about special full-time servants serving in lands where the government was not yet making vaccines available.
After that direction went out, we had a tremendous response from a number of branches who were able to obtain vaccines for special full-time servants who wanted to receive them. Several branches said that it had seemed impossible to get vaccines in their country at that moment. But they prayed about it, they followed the direction, and then either that same day or the very next day, Jehovah opened the doors, and suddenly they had the vaccine.
All of these events occurred rapidly. And even though it was difficult to make so many adjustments in such a short period of time, we could see Jehovah's hand in the governing body's decisions. Television, radio, video conferencing have all served our brothers well, which just goes to show that Jehovah was guiding the governing body as they made these decisions so early in the pandemic.
You know, we've always appreciated the direction we received from the faithful slave, but at that unique time especially, it was so encouraging to see Jehovah use them to make these major decisions. And they made many that 1 week in March.
Although there have been many challenges and sad times during the pandemic, it's been amazing to see many positive developments. So many inactive ones have returned. So many Bible studies have been started.
We saw how Jehovah guided us through, decision by decision, step by step, and seeing how Jehovah led us through this situation has helped me to see that regardless of what is going to come up in the future, Jehovah is going to do the same thing.
Like scriptures say, we get our plagues. Yeah, those times. But overall, when you're in Jehovah's arms, what's to worry?
You could say every one of the governing body's faith was strengthened as we got through this trial. And it's just a continuous thing of our faith being built up and how Jehovah is directing us and he's preparing his people for life in that new world, the real life that's coming.
It's been a real privilege to see Jehovah's Spirit in action during this pandemic. It strengthened our faith to see him use the governing body to provide scripturally based direction, keep the kingdom work going, and all the while showing respect for life. As a result, our trust in Jehovah's organization is stronger than ever before. And building this trust now is vital because Jehovah is preparing us for future events, including the Great Tribulation.
Well, we take this opportunity to thank all of the brothers who work in the coordinators committee office for the hard work that they put forward during the pandemic. It was just amazing to see how many ways Jehovah has directed matters during these challenging times.
What an encouraging program. And that was just the first half. There's so much more to enjoy. We'll see you here next month for the rest of the program. But before we go, we'd like to meet our brothers and sisters in the Philippines in this month's video postcard. The Philippines is a tropical country in the western Pacific Ocean that's made up of more than 7,100 islands. Across those islands, you'll find an astonishing diversity of landscapes, from pristine beaches and lush farmlands to dramatic mountain ranges. There are also bustling cities, including the capital, Manila, one of the most densely populated cities in the world. The over 230,000 publishers living in the Philippines preach to a population of more than 109 million people. In 2021, 739,439 attended the memorial. That's more than three times the number of publishers. Let's travel to the southern part of the country, to one of the largest islands, Mindanao. Here, farmers grow staples like corn and rice, along with cacao, pomelo, and durian, a popular Asian fruit famous for its unusual, pungent smell. The southern tip of Mindanao is home to the 97 publishers in the Margus congregation. In this remote part of the country, the pandemic posed some unique challenges. Because of unreliable internet service, the congregation chose to schedule its meetings on Zoom at 3:30 a.m. Why so early? The internet signal is more stable during those early hours of the morning. The publishers may have missed out on a few hours of sleep, but they didn't miss any of the spiritual food being provided through the meetings. In other areas served by the congregation, there's no internet or cell service at all. So the brothers listen to meetings broadcast over radio. But those challenges haven't dampened their zeal, especially when it comes to sharing the good news with the indigenous population. Since 2019, the congregation has been hosting a Blaan language group. Blaan is an indigenous language spoken by about 125,000 people. The Blaan people are famous for their handicrafts and colorful native costumes. With several publications and videos now available in Blaan, native speakers can hear the truth in their own language. The 28 brothers and sisters of the Blaan group in the Margus congregation would like to send you their warm love and greetings. And please remember, dear brothers and sisters, we love you all very much. From the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, this is JW Broadcasting.